From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The typical burial in America means 3 gallons of formaldehyde and mercuric chloride, a metal casket, a cement vault, and a cemetery full of carved headstones. But more and more Americans are saying no thanks to that. Cremation is way up. Now comes green burial. With a vision of simple pine boxes, green meadows, not fields of stone, and a shorter, cleaner, less expensive path to pushing up daisies, biodegradable seed pod caskets, papier-mâché urns, and it's happening. This hour, On Point, baby boomers, green burial, and the push for a back-to-nature approach to death in America. You can join the conversation. How do you want to go? In a metal casket, a pine box, a puff of smoke? Are you ready to think green when it comes to the rituals of dying? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Clemson, South Carolina, is Dr. Billy Campbell, a pioneer in the eco-burial movement in the United States. In 1998, he opened the first green burial grounds, the 33-acre Ramsey Creek Preserve in Westminster, South Carolina. He is director of the Center for Ethical Burial and co-founder of Memorial Ecosystems, a consulting firm specializing in memorial landscape projects. Billy Campbell, thanks for being with us.
Well, hello. Thank you.
Also with us from Atlanta, Georgia, Gary Latterman, professor of religious studies at Emory University and author of Rest in Peace, A Cultural History of Death in the Funeral Home in 20th Century America. Gary Latterman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Billy Campbell, first to you, what is it that you're doing down there at the Ramsey Creek Preserve?
Well, what we're doing is really almost a more of a traditional type of burial. People talk about what we're doing as being something really new, but in a way it's getting back to the way things have been done for hundreds of thousands of years. So it's more of a traditional burial, but in a way that we help restore a natural landscape. So it's not just green burial itself, but also we do this in such a way that we're restoring federally endangered plants and helping wildlife.
We understand that it's not just about how the dead are buried, but how the resources that go into that are used to save land around the burial place itself. We'll come to that, but I wish you'd describe for us what a typical, traditional, and I guess still mainstream burial means in America today, and compare that to what green burial means in your plot and others.
Well, you know, the usual contemporary funeral, people can spend $5,000, $10,000 or more dollars, and a lot of that goes into purchasing expensive casket that the family just sees for a short period of time, the embalming, the fixing of the body to make the body look like it's alive. Of course, at the site, you've got more of a golf course type appearance usually, or pea gravel in some of the churchyards. The excavation is often done by everything's done kind of behind the scenes. Often the family doesn't even see the casket go into the ground. And it really, at this point, it just becomes a waste of resources and a waste of space.
And what is a typical, what goes into the ground in a typical funeral?
Well, you have a large vault.
A vault is made of cement? Is that where the cement comes in?
Yeah, usually it's made of cement. Sometimes they'll have ornate. You can buy really fancy vaults even. And then there'll be a casket that goes inside that. Then they'll put the turf back on, and you'll have usually a bronze headstone or a large upright granite stone.
So there's the embalmed body, there's a metal casket, there's a cement vault, and then the headstone on top of that. And you're saying extraneous, almost all of it.
Well, I think that it probably makes some people feel better for whatever reason. So we're not saying that this is criticizing people's choices, but as far as I'm concerned, it's extraneous. Certainly when it's time for me, my funeral, I don't want all that stuff.
And what you do at Ramsey Creek Preserve is what, a pine box or no box at all? And what do the grounds look like?
Well, the grounds just look like a nature preserve. It's a woodland area. We do have some open meadows that have been burned or mown now for more than 20 years. And we have hawks and deer. And even recently, we saw a black bear there. So it's a very natural site. You can hear the stream, a little waterfall. It's really a beautiful place. But as far as the burial goes, we have had people just buried in their street clothes. We've had people request no shroud or anything. We've done that for them. We've done a number of shroud burials, which is just where the person's wrapped up. A lot like traditional Jewish and Muslim-type funerals with the shroud. Mm-hmm. And they're put directly into the ground. Generally, the family helps to lower the body into the ground. And then we just fill the grave back up and put all the plants that we'd removed back on top. And oftentimes we'll take that opportunity to introduce wildflowers that are appropriate for the site.
And here we go with a very old way, as you say, but in another sense, a very new way of thinking about, of acting on burial in the United States. Gary Letterman, give us some perspective on this here. We know this is still a young movement. It started in the UK. It's jumped the pond. And now we're reading about, I don't know, maybe half a dozen places around the U.S. Where this is going on. What do you read into this? Is this indeed boomers looking for a different way to the great beyond than their parents took?
I think it's definitely that. We are in a cultural moment where people have a great deal of freedom to craft their own rituals for the disposal of the dead. And I would say that's pretty unusual, not just in American history, but really around the globe, since funeral rituals and the disposal of the dead, you know, are often some of the more central, fundamental rituals that hold society together. So they're the most resistant to change. We have seen now, as you mentioned before, with Hunter S. Thompson, a kind of wide range of different practices that are taking shape.
Hunter Thompson literally out of a kind of cannon behind his house in the Rockies with fireworks around his ashes.
Sure, but Timothy Leary did the same thing. I think we shot out into space. Jerry Garcia went to the Ganges, you know. So
right.
You really are seeing this incredible range of different alternatives.
And yet there is a return to history in a way. I'm reading, tell me if I'm right here, that it really wasn't until the Civil War era, a doctor named Thomas Holmes found a way to embalm bodies of soldiers heading home from the war, that most funerals went to parlors and that embalming became so common. Before that, it was something more like what Billy Campbell's describing, the back 40 for the burial.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, the Civil War is really a turning point in how Americans disposed of the dead. Before Civil War, there really was no embalming. And after the Civil War, you have the birth and the rise of the funeral industry, which is really based on embalming. Before that, yes, burial was more rural. It was more simple. It was still a very important affair. But it wasn't embedded in the larger commercialization that we see after the Civil War.
Now, Billy Campbell is talking about something that really does feel old, though, which is essentially going straight into the ground. There may be a pine casket. There may not even be street clothes, he said in one case. I know that cremation has been exploding in popularity, doubled in the last few years, the percentage of Americans who are cremated, and very high in some regions. Parts of California now, 80% in Marin County, I'm reading here, are cremated. Is that the real big trend we're looking at? Do you think that green burial is maybe a little too organic for a lot of Americans with their famous distance from death?
Time will tell, for sure. We've seen a few of these movements starting to take shape, and it's difficult to predict which one is going to stick. When cremation really came on the scene, for me, it's really 1963 in the publication of Jessica Mitford's book, The American Way of Death. Mm-hmm. It wasn't clear exactly if cremation and memorial societies were going to take off. Well, they did. At first, they were considered to be alternatives, or, you know, a way around the funeral director and the funeral home. But now, as you know, cremation is very much integrated and has been appropriated by the funeral industry, and they've found a way to live very comfortably with that as an alternative.
So they've come in, the funeral business is right in there with it. Billy Campbell, what's the problem with the traditional way of burial? Personal taste may come in here, and we'll talk about that. I'm sure we'll hear about that from our listeners. But environmentally, what's the problem?
Well, I think that it's a couple of things. First of all, the wasted resources, and then secondly, the missed opportunities. This kind of the idea that I had about burying people really was driven home after my father died, and we looked how much we spent on his funeral, and it just occurred to me we could have bought 4 acres of land and buried him for that. And that, so there's this real opportunity to have those resources to go to something that could give value to future generations. So I think that there is, you know, number one, the waste of space, and the other thing, the waste of the resources. And I think then the missed opportunities. But as far as the rituals go, and that's another part of this, we're trying to bring families into the ritual. This is all about the families participating, whether they help close the grave, whether they help plant things on the grave, and the families have found that really meaningful. And we do try to integrate traditional religious services. We've had evangelicals being buried there, Orthodox Jews. I mean, we've had a whole range of services, and it's amazing how what we do is very much in keeping with traditional religious values.
There's no conflict with religion.
No.
I mean, most religion. Well, I don't know. Maybe some do, but I mean, you can basically go out however you like in many religions, can't you?
Right, and so in this, but this is in keeping with a lot of the core traditions of major religions, including Buddhism and Christianity, Judaism.
But a whole new way compared to what's going on traditionally with all that cement and metal casket and the big cemetery. Billy Campbell, Gary Latterman, please stand by. We're talking this hour about green burial and the push toward greener rites of death in America, about eco-burial, home funerals, and boomers facing death. You can join us. How do you want to go out? In a traditional American funeral with all the casket money can buy, to a field of marble and granite to last the ages, or in a pine box to a green meadow? Are you ready for green burial? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about green burial and the new push toward greener rites of death in America. We're joined from Clemson, South Carolina, by Dr. Billy Campbell. He's a pioneer in the eco-burial movement in the United States. And from Atlanta, Georgia, by Gary Latterman, professor of religious studies at Emory University, author of Rest in Peace. You can join us as well. What do you think? You've been listening to all of this being described, what we do now, what we might do one day, what some are doing already. What do you foresee? Are you ready for green burial for yourself? Or does this sound like new agey boomer trendiness? Do you want to literally push up daisies and pretty quick? And why do we bury ourselves in steel and cement? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Lisa is calling from Somerville, South Carolina. Hi, Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi. My husband and I are going to be buried at Ramsey Creek, and I've done some research on this because in South Carolina, you don't have to use a funeral director. So, we've called around and seen what we need to do, and we both plan on just being wrapped in a sheet from the house. Now, we're both organ donors, too, so, it's probably not going to be very clean, but most people deal with that kind of thing on a regular basis. If you cook, you deal with meat, and by the time either of us die, what's going to be left is just the organic remains.
So you've already planned to go right into Billy Campbell's burial grounds there in South Carolina. May I ask how old you and your husband are, sort of, Lisa?
We're in our early 40s.
And what has brought you to this plan? Why this instead of the traditional way or instead of cremation?
Well, cremation is a waste of resources. Not quite as bad as a traditional burial, but you still have the energy that needed to cremate the body and the space to put the ashes. That and the resources that make up my body don't go back into the earth. They go up in smoke. That's a waste. My husband and I are avid hikers, and at Ramsey Creek, they are preserving the land, and you can come in and use the hiking trails. I think that's a wonderful way for our bodies to be used.
Lisa, may I ask, if you have children, have you talked with them about it? What do they think? Or your family?
My children are both in their older teens. My daughter is not comfortable about thinking of our death, but she understands that this is our desire. Right now, she's probably a little too young to handle the responsibility, so I've talked to my sister about making arrangements if both of us were to die at the same time. You know, she would have to get us there. I called my parents and to let them know that if they get the phone call that something's happened to us, get on the next plane because there will be no viewing. It's going to be, at the house and in the car and up to Ramsey Creek.
Wow. That is doing it your way. Lisa, we hear the detail of your planning and your passion for the new way. Thank you for calling. Billy Campbell, Lisa raises so many issues here, just questions that come up. First of all, she's saying, I'm not going to use a funeral director at all in South Carolina. I don't have to. What is the law in general, and what does it mean not to use a funeral director? How does one go down that road?
Well, you know, this is regulated state by state, and every state seems to have something a little bit different. But in most states, you can bury your own dead. Lisa Carlson has a book out, I think, called what was called Burying Your Own Dead or Caring for Your Own Dead. And she lists the state requirements, you know, state by state. But most states do allow the families that responsibility or the community that responsibility. There are traditional Jewish burial societies for observant Jewish people in some areas of the country that take care of this. So this is, again, this is something that's been done for a long, long time. And if someone's interested in doing their own funeral, though, they certainly need to do the research beforehand.
I see the statistic 45 out of 50 state citizens can legally bypass funeral homes, and often they have to get a permit to go straight to a burial site?
Right. There's some paperwork that has to be filled out, and someone needs to be trained to fill out the paperwork. But again, it's not that difficult. I think you mentioned Jerry Lyons has taught some people around the country how to do this paperwork.
We're going to talk with Jerry Lyons in just a few minutes. Five
Great.
States, Connecticut, Indiana, Louisiana, Nebraska, and New York, those five require by law that citizens go through funeral directors. And when Lisa says you know, they're going to have their parents called and bodies go in the station wagon and ride up to your burial grounds, is it really as simple as that? I mean,
well, there will have to be some paperwork because, you know, we can't just have people showing up with bodies without paperwork.
right.
Raise all kind of
yes, what is
kind
going
of
on here? Gary Latterman, you hear the way that our caller describes with a kind of casualness, and I don't mean to say that she takes death lightly, but a kind of ease describing this very organic transfer from life to death to burial. That seems to me very much unlike what most of what 20th century Americans saw.
It's a very different cultural milieu to be thinking about and experiencing death than it was 40 or 50 years ago, for sure. There's all kinds of different discourse around death, and obviously we are still very much under the scientific perspective on how we understand death and what its meaning might be. But there are still a great many people who are very concerned about the religious or sacred dimensions to the body, mm-hmm. and being careful about proper ritual behavior. One thing that's interesting to me, too, is that what we see is really, as you put it, this is in a way similar to the advertising campaign for Burger King, you know, have it your way. But people are making the choices for themselves. This is unprecedented. It's usually the family members and close relations who plan the funeral. We're at a point now in history when people and boomers are taking the initiative to plan out their own funerals, and that's going to change the scene for sure.
I've seen that done, sadly, in my own life recently, and been very moved by some of the results. But is there a conflict between what Billy Campbell's describing in green burial and religious tradition?
It depends which religious tradition and which segment of that religious tradition you're talking about.
We've heard that it doesn't conflict with Jewish. What about Christian? Many Americans are Christian.
Sure. And for many, it would be very easy for them to accept this practice and to maintain their Christian identity. It's a very suitable and appropriate practice for many people, although still people will want to go through the church. I think there's a great deal of concern of maintaining tradition when it comes to burial, and family members also, if it isn't planned out, generally, as the literature says, feel a great amount of guilt, which kind of spurs them along to really go all out in the funeral for their loved one who
right.
didn't have a chance to plan what he or she wanted.
Billy Campbell, if a person wants to go the church funeral route, does that require deviation from green burial? Does that require embalming and preserving and so on? Because that takes time to put together.
Well, it does take time to put together, but there are ways of keeping the body chilled. And our local funeral home that we've been working with put in a refrigeration unit, which basically stretches out the timeline considerably. We are also, though, for what it's worth, we are working with some churches and a synagogue right now, a church in Taos, New Mexico, and a synagogue in the Marin area. So, we are working directly with churches and religious groups on these projects.
It wasn't so long ago there weren't many cremations in America. Now there are just many, many, many. There still haven't been that many green burials. I'm reading different numbers here. I don't know what the most current is, but it's a few hundred, as I understand. Do you see this becoming a mainstream practice at some point, or is this for the ecophiles?
Well, curiously enough, I mean, a lot of the people who have been chosen this at Ramsey Creek and that have written us from around the country would not identify themselves as environmentalists. We buried one fellow up there who had headed up the local anti-zoning group, and he told me, he said, look, I love the outdoors, I just don't like you environmentalists, and he wanted to be buried outside in his overalls in a plain pine box. Mm. So we are seeing people who don't identify themselves as environmentalists, but like the fact that for them it's more in keeping with their traditional religious values, or it's kind of an old-timey sort of thing and that they want to get back to, and also the possibility that it's less expensive. So we're seeing a much broader group of people than I would have expected. I really thought it was going to be primarily environmentalists, but it's been surprising to us.
Well, we've got a mountain of people that want to talk about it. Let me continue turning to them. Bob is calling from Saranac Lake, New York. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi. Great topic. Fascinating show.
What do you think?
Well, you know, up until about a half an hour when I heard your show, I was convinced that I was going to go cremation as, part of my recycling effort.
A lot of people thinking that way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, after hearing the show, I think what I want to do is try and reroute my body through a medical university. I've had a tremendous number of medical issues for being 54, and if I can do something to help out with research and then, after that have my body cremated, I would just soon do that.
So you want to make your body available for science, for research? We understand that. But what about on the green burial part? Is that a step too far for you?
No, I would kind of leave it up to the medical university after they finished with, what they needed to do.
You're saying you don't want to know? I don't want to think about it? Is that it?
No, I really don't have a problem with death and dying. I think I've been so close, so many times that I'm quite comfortable with it. After I'm dead, I don't have any strong religious beliefs about, the physical body.
But it sounds as though you may be warming up to this idea that Billy Campbell and others have out there. Bob, thanks very much for calling. I want to get one more call here. Harry is calling from Ayr, Massachusetts. Hi, Harry. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks. We're good.
For this show. I just want to make a comment that anybody who thinks that this is going to save a whole lot of people a lot of money, I think, is kidding themselves, because the funeral industry, which is now consolidating in the days of the independent funeral director, are probably the end is probably on the horizon.
What is it, chains now that are moving in? Or?
Well, for example, when my dad died, my dad always said he wanted to be buried in a pine box.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to the funeral director, he was happy to show us several extremely expensive pine boxes around the room.
How about carved pine or maybe mahogany?
Well, no, he had pretty well, I think pine was right up at the top of the line.
I got it.
We could have had cardboard or particle board, but the marketing of that industry and the lobbying efforts are not going to let this happen. If you're going to insist on putting the dirt on the grave of your deceased relative, they're going to sell you commemorative chrome shovels. I mean, they're not going to let this happen.
You think the funeral industry is that powerful that they're going to stand between Americans and a simple pine box and a place in the meadow?
Well, they already have stood between. I mean, most people would prefer a fairly simple, funeral, but
right.
It costs you a lot of money no matter how you want to go. I mean, I think it's a worthwhile subject, but I just don't think that that industry is going to let it happen. It's becoming more powerful. It's becoming a heavy marketing effort.
Yep. No, we've seen it. Let us pick it up. And thanks very much for your call, Harry. $15 billion industry. Gary Latterman, Billy Campbell's got a cause here, but is he up against big business in the funeral business? It's going to turn this into a big moneymaker, too.
It's hard to say. You've already heard from Dr. Campbell that he's collaborating with a local funeral home. It's very easy to paint the more negative stereotypes about the funeral industry, but on the ground, it's much more complicated, and there are all kinds of ways in which local funeral directors will, you know, work with families and with these kinds of ideas in ways that really are satisfying.
But they're there to make money. We hear that they make $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 per death now. If this would be a much less expensive path, that looks like it hardly fits into their flow chart of where their money's supposed to come from.
True. And I'll just mention that we heard the same thing about cremation. It was going to be a new alternative low-cost way to dispose of your dead relatives. But it has also grown into a highly commercial industry.
Right.
I mean, this is the consumer capitalist society that we live in.
So this is America. Don't assume that a green burial is going to be cheap. Billy, I'm sure you've got things to say on that, but I want to get one more voice in here, if I may. Joining
sure.
us from Sebastopol, California, is Jerry Grace Lyons. She's director of Final Passages, a nonprofit organization supporting home funerals. She's worked for 10 years as a home funeral guide. Jerry Lyons, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
What is a home funeral?
A home funeral is where the family is in charge of their own funeral arrangements. They are there to take care of the body if they wish to do that, to bathe and prepare the body to preserve it at home, and have the family and friends around to gather in the privacy of their own home.
So it means no funeral director, no funeral home company involved. The death happens at home or at the hospital, but the body comes to the home for observance.
That's right. The family is there to keep the body at home during the time that they're honoring them at home. They can have ceremony or not. That's up to them. But that's what it's all about, is just the family being in charge, often building or decorating a casket, creating ceremony at the home, and having it fit their individual budget, and also not being subject to external or imposed schedules by a funeral home that they've rented, like a building for
half
hour.
Jerry, this goes way back. We remember, of course, Victorian era, where the body would be laid out in the parlor, maybe for days. But these days, we're rather distant from that, most Americans. I mean, do most families, I know you're in a special part of the country there, maybe, in Northern California, but do most families have the familiarity with the physicality of death and the factuality of it to deal with a home funeral?
No, they don't in this country. We've been away from this tradition of caring for our own dead for several generations, and we've just forgotten what that's like. But we all used to do this. So through education, we can demystify this. Fill in the gap, the facts of what it's like to care for the body again, help people to realize it's not frightening, it's not scary, and also offer some guidance so that people feel like they're not alone doing this, wondering what to do. We also have a handbook that people can read, how to take care of their loved one's body or how to create a home funeral.
Wow, this is new terrain. Do you see this catching on, or is this going to be the real outer perimeter of American practice?
I feel this is really here to stay. This is a growing movement. There are people who have been taking our courses, Honoring Life's Final Passage, and starting up their own little support groups all in all different states, as well as different parts of California. And I've helped hundreds of families now, and it's getting really, it's growing.
Wow, this is something. This is new terrain. Jerry Lyons, please stick with us. Gary Latterman, Dr. Billy Campbell, we're talking this hour about green burial, eco-burial, home funerals, and boomers facing death. Is it time for something more natural? And how will the boomer generation change the American way of dying, of marking death? What's your ideal final resting place? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at babsoncapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about green burial and the push toward greener rites of death in America. We're joined by a pioneer in the movement. Dr. Billy Campbell joins us from Clemson, South Carolina. He's director of the Center for Ethical Burial, and he's doing it. From Atlanta, Georgia, we're joined by Gary Latterman, professor of religious studies at Emory University. And from Sebastopol, California, Jerry Lyons is with us. She's worked for 10 years as a home funeral guide. She's director of Final Passages. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Ingrid is calling from Belmont, Massachusetts. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm interested in some nitty-gritty information. How long does it take to decompose, you know, inside or outside of a pine casket, and does it change the landscape? Is there a sink? That kind of stuff.
Oh, the real nitty-gritty. All right, we'll deliver. Billy Campbell, I guess first question, how long does it take to decompose in a traditional metal casket and cement vault? How long in a pine casket? How long with none? And what does it mean very physically to the landscape?
Well, keep in mind that the embalming fluids that they put in people, it's really not enough to keep the body in a natural state. People get this idea the body is being preserved, and it's really just being preserved long enough to get you in the ground, and then there's a considerable at that point, leakage of fluids from the body. If people go in a mausoleum, they have to have a liner for that to keep the kind of stuff from leaking out of the box.
So we're not talking King Tut and the 2,000, 5,000-year-old pyramids here. It goes pretty quick.
No, or Vladimir Lenin or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about that it does go pretty quickly, but there's something there inside the box. Certainly at Ramsey Creek, it's going to be a lot quicker, natural burial. We would expect it to be much quicker. It would also depend, though, if you're burying someone in a very dry environment, like in a desert-type situation, it might take a lot longer.
No, that's not South Carolina, though. So in your case, I mean, how long until the body is really a part of the earth?
It's within just a matter of weeks and months. There's going to be very little of the body left. Eventually, when they've moved old cemeteries in South Carolina, when they built the lakes here, a lot of times it was just a kind of a dark spot in the earth and some teeth, and that was about all that was left.
And Ingrid wants to know, what about the terrain of the landscape? Do you have a kind of a pockmarked meadow there? Are there sinks everywhere where there's been a burial?
No. Actually, we actually have some burial techniques where we don't remove the dirt and put it to the side, so you do end up with some mounds. And we take the turf, if it's in the meadow or if it's in the woodland area, there's a thing called the root mat, and stabilize the mound. We put some, if the stones that come up from the grave itself, we'll distribute some of those.
I understand what you mean when you say you don't remove the earth, the soil, for the burial. How do you do that?
Well, what I'm saying is you don't remove it off sites. In a lot of the cemeteries, they'll have to haul off some of the dirt and they'll put it in a big pile somewhere.
Oh, so you'll have a mound, I see, over the burial site in effect, which will then subside.
It will subside, but it should not sink because of the stabilization. The graves we have, they're going out now since 1998, and we've not had any sinkage, and there is no smell, of course. That's
right.
This is a very old technology that works. I mean,
let me ask, since we're on the nitty-gritty, what about the density of a green burial ground? We know what conventional cemeteries look like. Some of them in urban areas really chock-a-block.
Up to 2,000 per acre, yeah.
Yeah. How closely are you burying people, or does it even matter?
Well, we actually do. I mean, we have a set of guidelines at the Center for Ethical Burials website that we've developed to as a guideline for people to look. And density is one of the issues. At Ramsey Creek, 30 to 50 per acre is all we're doing because it was a very natural site, and we didn't feel we could do higher density than that without causing a lot of damage. Some sites, if it's been really wrecked and you're taking an old field, you might be able to get 200 per acre, maybe even 300 depending. But again, the contemporary cemeteries are 1,000 to 2,000 per acre, so we're talking about much, much lower density.
Let's take another call. Brent is calling from Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, Brent. What do you think?
Well, if I had my choices here, I do not know about the legalities or anything, but this is one of the things I was thinking about was I would like to be dipped into a vat of liquid nitrogen, froze instantly, removed from that, and then taken out and pulverized. Before this process, I am an organ donor. I'd want to be harvested.
So organs donated and then frozen and pulverized. Why? What's the symbolism?
Well, actually, I want to be freeze-dried, okay? Now, either thrown into a garden or taken up into the atmosphere, blown out that way.
So you want to ride on the space shuttle. And why? Why this picture of frozen and taken to the garden? How do you think about what makes most sense for you, Brent?
Well, actually, that way I can be completely reused, maybe thrown back into the food chain, or just my body would still be in use here on the earth. So, I do not care to be entombed.
So there's a vote by a roundabout path for the green cycle. Let's get another caller here, if I may. We've got Ed calling from Coosahatchee, South Carolina. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
We're very well. What do you think?
Well, my wife and I, we bought 10 acres out in the country a few years ago, and we're going to be buried in our own backyard, more or less. And it's not to try and take any money from the undertaker. He's a good friend of mine, but I just can't see putting thousands of dollars worth of vault and a casket into the dirt.
Do you have a permit for that? Do you need one, or are you just going to do it?
Well, he can handle it. We're going to go through him.
I see.
And not going to be embalmed, and we're organ donors, so whatever's left, they'll just wrap up in something and put in a hole in the yard. We've got a butterfly garden that we've developed, and right behind that we have a space for my wife and I, our two kids, if they want to be buried there, some grandchildren, if they want to be buried there, they can.
Sounds pretty homey.
Well, we think so. It's just like a family plot, and that's where we'll all be. You know, we're Christians, and I believe once death occurs, mm-hmm. I'll be with the Lord, and what's mm-hmm. left is just a shell that my spirit lived in, and we're just going to discard it.
Ed, we've got it, and it sounds very down home and almost appealing. Though we're in no hurry, mind you. But thank you for sharing that, Gary Latterman. What about private burial on private land? If you've got 10 acres, can you go down to City Hall and get a permit and be plumped right in the ground there?
Well, this again will vary state by state, and some states allow for this, but usually it is still a very bureaucratic process. So you can't just go and put your remains on your land without notifying authorities and getting through all the formal procedures. But what this is, what's interesting is that what we're seeing, and believe me, I'm no religious conservative in any way, but we're seeing the dissipation of really cultural authority in specific ritual specialists mm-hmm. who are really charged with taking care and being intimate with the body. You can look at this not just in terms of the funeral industry, funeral directors mm-hmm. as the ritual specialist, but also think about hospitals and medicine. You mentioned the home birth movement as well.
Right.
Again, you're taking a very special, important rite of passage that has to do with the body and what has traditionally been under the charge of some kind of, identified authority is now really open to more personal kinds of desires and wishes.
And how do you see that, good, bad, or indifferent?
Me? Oh, I don't judge. I'm a historian.
Right.
No, I think it's just a sign of the times. I don't think it necessarily represents some, moral dilemma or it's something we should necessarily celebrate. But it does seem to be a cultural trend for sure, and you could say the same thing about religion.
Jerry Lyons, I want to put that out to Jerry Lyons in California. Are you a bunch of death anarchists out there, Jerry? Is that the point?
I believe it's true that the people that have been involved in the home birth movement are also wanting, they have concerns about their actions and impacting our lives and future generations.
But do you see any conflict between home funerals, green burial, and traditional religion?
No, I don't see any conflict there. I think it's up to the individual family and the way they want to do it. I think this is just bringing it into a more it's personalizing, it's mm-hmm. privatizing what we do. It's more intimate, as Dr. Letterman's speaking mm-hmm. of that.
But maybe less institutional authority hanging around it. I want to get one more call, if I may, Jerry. Patrick is calling from Boston. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you doing?
We're well. What do you think?
Interesting gamut here. I was not born. I was born in Ireland. And many years ago, I remember my first death in my life. And mm-hmm. I vaguely remember the shroud and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then came to America in 1958. And my first funeral was a home funeral, which was
wow.
bizarre.
1958. Frankly,
1958. Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, my most recent funeral was obviously a member of my family was very young.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A couple of years ago, and we had him. He was cremated, and as I speak to you, his ashes are right in front of me.
On the mantle?
On the mm-hmm. mantle.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I would get to that point. I mean, I never thought I could do that. I never thought I could sit here and say, that's appropriate or acceptable or even will work for me. And I've come a long way. I'm obviously Ireland, I'm Catholic, and so forth. And it's amazing to me that the gamut that you can spread, and
yeah.
now that I think about it, now that this mm-hmm. show is on, I said, what do I want to do? And I think I like the idea of the organ donation, and then whatever my family wants to do with me is appropriate.
What about green burial?
I think that's fine. Other than the fact, I do like?
Yeah.
I do like seeing a name that I can look at.
The marker somewhere.
Marker, something.
Our time is so short, let us pick up that question, Patrick, and thank you for your call. Billy Campbell, how about it? It's all green. It goes back to nature. Is there a marker? I mean, cemeteries in many ways are for the living.
Well, we actually had a disagreement with the Natural Death Care Center in the UK. And earlier you talked about this beginning in the UK. They actually had the first green burial ground, but it was not a memorial landscape. It didn't have a conservation component. So we brought that into the mix. We also found early on that people did want to have stones. And at Ramsey Creek, literally hundreds of thousands of stones were taken out of the fields and the woods for building materials and to make the fields more plowable, I guess. Mm-hmm. And stones do have an important ecological role, at least in the southern Appalachians where we are. So we do allow ecologically functional stones of the same geological context.
Engraved with a name and dates.
Engraved with a name and dates. We do ask that we don't like the pictorial art kind of thing, mm-hmm. so we don't like drawings and things on them.
And not really your old geometric tombstones by any means, but something more
organic.
No, they're
just, they're laid flat for ants and other things. They're ecologically functional.
Well, it's an amazing picture of choice and of diversity in what Americans are doing and of your green burial vision. Billy Campbell, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
You're welcome.
Billy Campbell, Director of the Center for Ethical Burial, and Jerry Grace Lyons in Sebastopol, California, Director of Final Passages. Fascinating talking with you. Thanks very much for sharing.
Thank you, Tom.
And Gary Latterman at Emory University, author of Rest in Peace. Professor Latterman, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
It's a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, California enacts emergency regulations to protect outdoor workers. This is On Point. In California, 10 outdoor workers have died of suspected heat stroke since July 13th, prompting the State Division of Occupational Health and Safety to step in with emergency regulations. The new rules go into effect this week. They require that employers provide shade for outdoor workers and encourage them to drink 4 glasses of water an hour. Plus, employers must now educate workers and supervisors on the dangers of heat stroke and about proper response to the illness. Constantino Cruz was one of 4 farm workers who lost his life to heat stroke this July. Originally from Oaxaca, Mexico, Cruz settled near Bakersfield, California, over a year ago. In this radio diary, his brother, 22-year-old Juan Cruz, tells Constantino's story.
Mi nombre es Juan Cruz. Tengo 22 años. Apenas tengo un año que estoy aquí en el
I've been working in the Huasco area in the fields for a year. Last month is when I reached the one-year anniversary. My brother came here a month before I did. Together we've worked in the grapes, in the nut sweeping, in the pruning season, and in tomato. We knew that several workers had died because of working in the heat in the fields. In fact, I remember a week before Constantino fell ill, we had heard on the news and we talked about a worker who died out in the fields. On the 21st day he fell ill to heat stroke, I, Juan, was working in the weeding in the cotton fields, and Constantino was working in the tomatoes. I understand that at 3 o'clock he fainted. At 4 o'clock that day, the foreman came to my house and said, does anyone know Constantino? I said, yeah, that's my brother. The foreman said he was really ill and he's in the hospital, so he took me to the hospital to go see him. For 2 days he was asleep in the hospital. He wouldn't wake up. Finally, on the third day he woke up. And he started talking about how it was really, really hot that day. And that on the machine, he was working on the side of the motor, and the motor was making it even hotter. They wouldn't let him drink water while they were working. They would only let him drink water during break times. A co-worker of Constantino told me that he fainted on top of the tractor. So together, the workers have brought him down. They took him to a truck where they turned on the air conditioning, and he started to look better, but then later began to vomit. Finally, the labor contractor came and agreed to call the ambulance, and the ambulance came. They saw Constantino. They saw that he was really bad, and they called for a helicopter to air transport him to the hospital, and he was there for 4 days. That Monday, he was feeling better, so the doctors let him go. When he was home, I asked him how he felt. He said he felt better, but that he had a terrible headache. So I called the doctor, and the doctor said that the headache was normal and that it would go away. On the next day, Tuesday, the 26th of July, I went to work that day. Constantino stayed home to rest, to get some more rest. At about noon that day, my uncle, who stayed home with Constantino that day, called over to where we were working and said to come home right away, that Constantino lost consciousness. Since that day, he was never conscious again. He was asleep. On the 31st, he died. I was able to be with him every single day. I was by his side when his blood pressure began to drop and when he died. Constantino Cruz was 24 years old.
Juan Cruz's brother, Constantino, was one of 10 outdoor workers in California to die after exposure to extreme heat this summer. Juan spoke to independent producer Rachel Dornhelm. New California regulations to prevent further heat stroke fatalities go into effect this week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.